automatically do that. So let me see if I can go live now there. I think I can do it. So yeah, this is like the behind the scenes bit that the early birds in the audience get a privy to see. But really, no one else is meant to see this. I haven't worked out the way to work the green room properly, so everyone gets like a little bit of extra at the start of the show. ridiculous. I wish I was professional, you know. But no, that's not the case.
Just a story.
It is. And we'll talk about professionalism, actually, because it's a big topic for us because everyone's like working from home. So this is going to be a good one for us to segue into. Anyway, we are live. So welcome, everybody, to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 53. I'm delighted to be bringing it to you as I do every Friday. And I'm super excited today because we're going to be talking about a super important topic, mental health for recruiters during lockdown. So before I begin, just a quick bit of housekeeping. We're multi-streaming across, I think, a zillion different channels right now. So I just want to do a quick sound check, make sure everyone can hear me. For the people who are on Crowdcast, if you can hear me, just say a quick comment to say, yes, Hung, you're good. And that'd be good to know that everything's going well there. For the people who are watching in the Recruiting Brain Food Facebook group, I hope the multi-stream doesn't break down. Please say hello there. Quick comment on the video. Just make sure I can see that everything's going well there. I'm monitoring on my laptop there. And finally, for the folks on LinkedIn Live, probably the biggest audience on this, if you are watching this and it is going out and you can hear me, just say, yes, Hung, I can hear you. Please get on with it. That would be marvelous. Okay, thank you, everyone. I think everyone can hear and see me, which is great. Okay, so quick word for our sponsors, because every show this year has been sponsored by some amazing companies that are here and support the Brain Food ethic. This week's sponsors are Applied. They are one of the UK's, I think, most impressive companies in the assessment space. They focus on recruiting and debiasing assessments, and they've got a fantastic tool to help you do that. So if you're looking at diversifying your talent pool, if you're looking at moving beyond experience, resume, legacy type hiring practices, Applied are definitely a product you need to check out. Their website is Be Applied. I'm just going to share it in the chat there on Crowdcast. There you go. Be sure to look them up. Okay, so super excited today because Adam Gordon is out of the picture. Yes, thank God. He has been upgraded. He's been upgraded by my good friend, Gary Turner. Gary, how are you doing? How are you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. And Adam, you've not been upgraded, mate. Don't worry about it. I'll do my best.
Good stuff. Listen, for the people who don't know you, Gary, can you just quickly introduce yourself and, you know, what do you do?
Yeah, sure. Super quickly. So I basically work within a global corporate, heading up sales of 20 million. But my real passion is around unleashing human potential, around culture, around mindset, and really just trying to help us get out of our own way more effectively.
Yeah, amazing. And Gary, you and I have been sort of, I would say, good friends for a little while because we talked about, you know, your podcast, getting onto your show, which is absolutely fantastic, by the way. Feel free to share the link into the chat stream there, Gary, if you have a moment. It's a fantastic concept. And part of the reason why I thought you'd be really appropriate to co-pilot this show with me, because the show is all about value through vulnerability. Like, how do you get value from actually being transparent with who you are? And of course, you know, talking about some of the things that really are difficult for you to talk about. David, Adam's been upgraded. You missed the start of the show. We try to upgrade him every week. Today, I've succeeded. So he's out of the picture. Okay. Gary, quick question for you. Recruiting Brain Food, did you read it last week? And if so, what did you find interesting, man?
Yeah, I really, really did. And to be honest, there's an awful lot, but I think the thing that really struck out to me a lot, and I think we'll talk about that today, Hung, was Josh Burson's review of what he's calling reset. And I just think it's really relevant to our conversation today around mental health and even societally, actually, this strange situation we're dealing with. Is it actually an opportunity as it is something to be afraid of? And I'm leaning towards the opportunity right now.
Yeah, I think we're kind of, and we talk about how the emotions kind of move from, you know, for me, I had a very clear pattern as to how all this worked. You know, firstly, denial, you know, of course, it's not no big deal. This is just blown over. Then it was like a bit annoyed. You're like, oh, God damn, you know, well, why are these people, you know, spreading this disease around? And then it was like, I was a bit depressed. I was like, oh, holy crap. You know, I had plans for this year. You know, I was going to do stuff in 2020 and I can't do any of that. But then you kind of get into it. You kind of think, okay, fine, this has definitely happened. It's a global phenomenon. You can kind of point the finger, start blaming people, all the rest of it. Truth is, everyone is in the same boat. No one really wanted this. You know, everyone knows my politics. I'm not a Boris Johnson fan. But at the same time, I can see that I wouldn't wish his position in this particular case. You know, he's got an impossible, difficult task to try and manage this. And no political leader is going to make a good job of it, really. So it's almost like I'm at the point where I'm thinking, yeah, we have to now understand this is the reality, and you start sort of adapting to it and then planning how best you can make it suit. So yeah, I probably have not finished that journey. So I'm looking forward to where the mental state is going to be in a couple of weeks' time. But yeah, the Bursin article I've just shared, obviously everyone should follow Josh. He's one of the great synthesizers in our industry. But I think some of the commentary he's putting in there is really significant as well. So that was a great post. What else, Gary? What else is interesting, man?
What I found really interesting as well was the Ken Barber tweet around vague versus vivid when we're talking about communication. And I think, you know, whether you're looking at it through a TA lens, a HR lens, a personal lens, I think, again, one of the opportunities right now for us is to really think about, are we as clear in how we communicate or not? And actually, are there ways of being better around that?
You know what? That was such a marvelous tweet because he also illustrated the point by giving you a graphic. And the main thing here was, why do people not pay attention to the government guidance not to go out? And this happened, obviously. I mean, things are moving so fast, but this basically was about maybe 7-8 days ago. Cam's sort of view of it was that simply, the government was talking in abstract when it should have been talking in concrete. It should have been vivid rather than vague. For example, they were saying social distancing. That's abstract. It's a new term. Like, what the hell does that mean? We don't actually understand. Whereas vivid, concrete term is stay away from people. So it's like communicate in the language that people understand. Get away from abstract if you want people to do things. And don't have them try to work out at a conceptual level what you want for them to do. It's like, here's the clear guidance. Basically, right now, for the next 2-3 weeks, you need to stay away from as many human beings as possible. That's it. But the guidance wasn't that. It's like practice, which, again, esoteric term, right? Practice. A social distancing. I've got to compute what that means. A lot of people won't compute that, and they won't understand the importance of making sure you keep away from people. So everyone who's in the crowdcast, please check out that tweet. It was fantastic. And it was a UX designer that basically said, you know what, this is a comms problem. Here's how we solve that. And he did a very, very clear and obvious description of it. So yeah, good stuff. Okay, one more, Gary, before we get our guests on and start talking about this in depth.
No, awesome. I think the other one I found really interesting, and I know you're a big fan of the whole UBI conversation, Yang, Scott Santons, etc. I thought it's really interesting, the article about the top 10 most in-demand jobs in the US.
You know, was this? Was this out of the, was this a LinkedIn sort of survey, or was it a...
What was it? It's basically called Jobs in Demand During COVID-19.
It was LinkedIn. So they just, one of the things that has been happening, and the likes of it, Indeed, LinkedIn, and those companies that, you know, one of the few companies that are able to give us an overview, they've been, I think, pretty good in telling us what's happening. So absolutely, there's a COVID economy, as the rest of us grind to a halt and struggle to find the next penny. There's actually a small reversal in certain segments where there's actually a desperate need for people. And LinkedIn pulled those things out. Weird stuff like sanitation workers, garbage disposal people. We know about the supermarket clerks now, people in residential care homes. And that's not even talking about the obvious, like the frontline healthcare workers and Met Police and people like that. So really interesting to have a think about some of the other segments of the economy that are now in demand, essential worker. And there's an ethical dimension there because a lot of these essential workers, generally speaking, are quite poorly paid, poorly rewarded, lacking in status. So yeah, it turns out we actually need them to run society, and we don't need that many consultants or lawyers or, you know, the stuff that we do. So yeah, real big wake up call, a reckoning for us to come to. Okay, cool. Okay, before we bring Helen and Susanna on, Gary, I just want to get your views on the topic at hand, because the topic that we're talking about today is mental health for recruiters during lockdown. Now, I know you do sales, but I think it's a very similar type of job in the sense it's always been an in-office, raucous, you know, collegiate type of sense of job. It's actually very, very unusual, I think, shift to be a work from home person as a recruiter. So I just wonder what your thoughts are on this before we bring in some proper expertise, but before we bring on people who know what they're talking about. But, you know, what are your thoughts on the challenges that we currently have, and what are the things that you think people might expect if they're doing this for the first time?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me, I'll sort of qualify my lived experience before the experts come on. So I'm actually someone that burnt myself out around 6 years ago. And what that looked like for me was someone that, you know, you think it's something that just happens with a sort of click of your fingers. But for me, it was actually something really progressive hung. And it was actually a period of 6 months of overthinking, telling myself I wasn't good enough, telling myself my job's at risk, telling myself a load of stories until I went bang. So where I want to come from in this conversation today is around beliefs. So actually, however, when you're working at home, maybe you're now all of a sudden thrown into educating your kids for the first time, like many working parents are. So it's really, I would always start with the belief system part. So actually becoming aware to the stories we're telling ourselves and staying present and sitting in that emotion around those feelings is a good starting point, hon, for me, with all right. of it. Any new experience, right. Sit in the emotion and be okay with that. Don't try and suppress it, because that's where the damage comes from over time.
Right. That's a really good point, because that I like the phraseology there, because, you know, I mean, I think I've got emotions, right? But I do skip them. I'm like, all right, fine, move quick. You know, distraction has been my kind of technique. And I'm now getting to the point where I'm aware it probably isn't the most effective way of dealing with some of this shit. But you're right. You've got to maybe embrace it and understand that this is a feeling and recognize it, you know, not dismiss it as irrelevant, because it's actually quite an important thing. Your body and your mind are telling you something. So that's very interesting how that came to fruition. Quickly, because it's a very interesting sort of biography we've kind of gone into, but, and I don't want to kind of pry too much, Gary, if it's uncomfortable. But
pry away, hon. Pry away.
So I'll get the crowbar out. No, but so you hit this rock bottom. I mean, what was that? I mean, how did you know it was the bottom, and why did you think, why do you then do things differently?
Yeah, so to try and keep it nice and succinct for your viewers today. So the key reflection, and Helen will speak a little bit about this from some of the work she does, is that build up over 6 months, hun. I believe it was the outside world that caused me to feel a certain way. So I did challenge bullying in the workplace and was told to go away. Shouldn't happen, unethical. But I told myself when hearing that or experiencing that I'm in the wrong place of work or I'm not good enough. Yeah, so it wasn't actually the outside circumstance that caused me to feel a certain way. It's the story I told myself. Yeah.
Yep.
I think what happened, I realized over a course of 6 months, the stories I kept telling myself were getting more and more negative, more and more self-deprecating. And I think the key words I'd like to share with you and your listeners is, I think we innocently tie our self-worth to our net worth. So we think our salary, our bonus, our car, the long distance holiday somehow defines us. And when we break down everything, we realize actually it's just our thinking. Actually, what do we believe that we're good enough? Do we believe that we deserve that opportunity? Mm-hmm. Or are we tying everything from our insides to something that's outside of us? And that was the huge revelation for me over that period of time.
That's fascinating, because this almost feels like a Buddhist type of philosophy to a large degree, because you know, the external world and the internal world. We can't control the external world that much, you know, but we design the internal world a great deal. We create that. That's an act of human creation, how we imagine the world to be in our position in it. You know, if we understand that this is an act of creation, then maybe we can do something about it. In fact, we can. I mean, maybe the recognition that it is an act of creation is the start of us doing something about that. Wow, we're turning into Russell Brand, aren't we? This is amazing. Before we turn into like Jesus-looking hippies, let's bring I love Russell, by the way. Let's bring Helen on the show, and we'll also bring in Susanna Toklova, my good friend Susanna, who is, I think, just Susanna. I think that's the only Susanna that's there. If it isn't, then let's invite another Susanna on. They're both coming on, and then they're gonna. I love it when someone just puts their first name on, right? I mean, thank you, Susanna with a Z is quite rare, but there was another dude. I forget, a couple of episodes ago, someone was like a very common name, a Simon, and just put Simon in there. All right, that's great. There's like five of them that I could choose from. Randomly pick one of these Simons in, and thankfully I got the right person. There she is.
Hi, hello.
There's Susanna. Good to see you, Susanna.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. How are you?
I'm okay. Staying at home as everybody else. Yeah.
Great. I can hear you fine. So, Susanna, can you introduce yourself and what it is you do? I'm going to try and get Helen back on. Let's have a look.
So, I'm an existential psychotherapist working in a private practice from London and Bedfordshire area. Actually working from home as well. At the moment, I'm conducting online sessions with my full practice, so which is quite different what I used to do, because I face my clients. Face-to-face contact is probably the predominant way how I am dealing with my clients. So yes, I don't know what else I can say about myself. I love reading, I love dancing, and I don't like staying at home at the moment. I would love to go out.
Well, I tell you, this is really interesting to get you on the show, Susanna, because you can also tell from your own personal experience what the challenges are from being at home, not only in the professional context, because obviously you've had to move operationally. There's a big shift.
Yeah.
I think actually that's very similar to a lot of recruiting work. A lot of human resource work tends to be also quite in person as well. Let's start there. I mean, what would you say has been that shift? When you're speaking with your clients, previously you'd be face to face. What is the difference between, like, the video is quite good? I mean, it looks like, yeah, hey, everyone's on HD camera, you know, it looks okay. Pretty good. So what is the difference between in person and video?
I think I occasionally always work online with my clients, but it was like an additional tool I used when people were away and they still want to continue the therapy. My clients sometimes travel for work or they go away into different countries. So I continue working online with them. However, I had a preparation phase. Somehow I was kind of aware that something is happening and there is a possibility for us to move into a different mode. So actually I was, I think one week ahead when everybody else was still working from office, I was already informing all my clients that we will be moving to online counseling. And following on that, my clients were responding in a way, and I actually encouraged them to respond what they feel like it might be a challenge not to see me face to face, not to be in contact with me. And kind of you're talking about the social distancing. There's not something I do in a therapy room, of course. The importance in existential therapy is to face your client, to be with your client, to embody that experience. So kind of removing myself online, there is somehow I experience loss, as many of my clients did probably. But we kind of navigate ourselves through preparation phase that I made them all aware that I'm going to move to online practice, and if they can have some questions or any difficulties. And I must say that some of my clients, we have a difficulty face-to-face, already postponed the counseling for time being, which is somehow unfortunate, but that's sometimes happen when people have a struggle, for example, with expression or some other difficulties. So that's probably it. And also I'm dealing with the payments in a different way, because people might.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So with the payments, in a sense that the clients might have a difficulties with paying the sessions, so we agree, we have a different agreement to pay reduced fees or probably pay once this all is over, hopefully very soon. So it's affecting the financial side as well. I mean, and
of course. I don't know anybody that hasn't been impacted negatively financially on this. You know, we are talking about like a wipeout of the cash flow for many, many people, including myself. You know, I mean, at 220, you know, I had these projections. It was like, okay, where's the shredder? That it's gone. Yeah. You know, that's not happening. And it's a really tough time. So let's talk about that actually. And this is a question for both of you. What is the mental challenge when you have this economic insecurity? Because suddenly there are a lot of people, particularly in the recruiting side, actually, because they need companies to be growing, economies to be growing, to be doing their job. Now they're working from home and they're thinking, oh, the job, the number of requisitions that I'm used to working are slowing down. My company's saying there's a hiring freeze. They've got to be thinking about, oh, I'm going to get laid off soon. Like, what are the things that you, how would we kind of best handle that from a mental point of view?
Okay, so that's a really, really hard question to ask. But I think I was, before we start, I was kind of thinking what teams can be kind of implemented from the existential point of view. And I think it is something about being experiencing some kind of a collective trauma here, that the fabric of society will be changed following the pandemic. And I think there will be lots of shifts in our perception of how we are in the jobs, how we are with our people, like even our family members or friends. So I think going back to society following this pandemic, we have to really take into consideration the present times. And in the present times, we'll be talking probably about the limitation and boundaries. For many of us, we previously had kind of freedom and opportunities, and there was no boundaried world. We can sit on a plane and go and do business wherever. But today we are restricted. And I'm thinking about from mental health point of view, we have to be able to manage that limitations, which will always be present. Probably even in this present time, I think it's far more salient. It's kind of staring us into face that there are limitations, that there are boundaries for us. So there are probably boundaries for our work too. So some things will be not possible, like face-to-face contact in my case with the clients. So then I can move towards the flexibility that I have to adapt. I have to be flexible. I have to find different ways. I even offer the free session to my clients in a case they will really feel the need because of the unprecedented situation we experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's something about giving away something to be really connected and not losing this connection with the outside world. And I believe everybody can do it. Everybody can make the change. The financial impact you're talking about is maybe because I am not acquiring the new clients at the moment. Because
So basically what I was trying to say, and by the way, hi, Helen, great to see you. Hello, come Helen. On the show. Helen, let me just come back to you and we'll finish off this quick topic with Susanna first. Financial insecurity. Everyone in the audience right now is probably thinking about this in a way they weren't doing 4 weeks ago. You know, 4 weeks ago, we were actually planning our holidays, buying a new car, doing all of these things. Now it's like, oh my goodness, what are we cutting from our budget? Now, what would your sort of advice be to people who are feeling like massively under strain here? There's going to be people that really can't make the numbers work. They're looking at the spreadsheets. It's not working. Is there any kind of technique that you could say this is the best way to handle it so you don't burn up inside and you don't kind of crash and burn, or you don't hit rock bottom, using sort of Gary's example at the beginning? How would you kind of what's your input on that, Susanna?
Me or Helen? I do believe that there is something about connecting and connecting online and finding the ways. But with the financial strain, I would say there will be probably businesses which will be not surviving at this time. So maybe there is somehow being kind of resilient enough to maybe acknowledge the reality, which might not be very happy reality. But I believe in a resilience. So I think that if somebody was able to maintain a business previously, they will probably find a way how to pick themselves up and find a way. So I think that is something about the resilience, human resilience within us in that sense.
We might be able to find it. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. You know, because sometimes it's only in the moments of adversity that we might actually find out about ourselves a little bit. And we occasionally will surprise ourselves. We're talking at the beginning with when Gary was talking about the stories that we tell ourselves can help, you know, either constrain our worlds or can expand them. And maybe this type of crisis, as unwelcome as it is, might give us an opportunity to renegotiate some of those stories. Okay, cool. Let's come back to that in a bit. But let's get Helen into the show properly. Helen, great to see you on here. Sorry that we struggled to get you on board. I know you've been bashing at the door for a while.
Technical, yeah.
So Helen, for the people who don't know you, can you just quickly introduce yourself and who you are?
Yeah, sure. So Helen, I'm a coach. And I'm an innate brilliance coach, so really connecting to everything you're talking about. We innately are brilliant, resourceful, resilient by nature, and we've just got lost. We've stopped being able to see that because we've got so caught in our psychology. We've lost sight of who we really are beneath all that. So that's my work, is guiding people back to who they really are in their essence, in their nature, so that the stories actually are irrelevant.
I'm going to just step right in there, Helen, because I'm not sure I believe you. I mean, everyone's innately brilliant. Surely there's some like mediocre people out there.
No. So it gets disguised more or less depending on how strong the stories are, how much they're believed, but they change all the time. You know, you'll have experienced that for yourself, Gary. Clearly you did in your experience where the stories look so true and so strong. We really limit ourselves. We believe we're this small person who's incapable and not good enough. But equally, we have periods of time where the stories are absent. Those times when we're in flow, or we do have those brilliant, fresh ideas to, oh my God, yeah, I could make money by doing this, or I could help myself with my health by doing that. And it's in those moments of fresh thinking, that's our brilliance coming through. And it's only in the presence of believing the stories that it's like the pipe gets blocked and they can't be heard. So I really help people recognize that natural mechanism of the system, because the more we recognize it for ourselves, we don't have to work at it. We don't have to manipulate it or engineer it or manufacture it. We just naturally recognize how it works at its best. And then we naturally work in alignment with it because it makes sense. Like, why would we keep putting our hand on a hot stove? It's the same with our psychology. As soon as we see that we're psychologically putting our hands on hot stoves, we just automatically take the hands off.
All right. So I'm now a little bit more persuaded on this. But let me sort of ask the question, like, why do we lose our way in this way? Like you mentioned, it was a natural sort of thing that we all have these the natural potential of humans is high. So how come that's not achieved by so many people? That if it's natural, surely it should be the default.
Well, yeah, so you'd think so, except we're taught away from it. So through our childhood, we're programmed with beliefs, we're programmed with stories, and we believe them. We're essentially taught that we're a separate individual. Excuse me. We're taught that somehow we're good if we crawl and we're bad if we, I don't know, hit the table with a hammer. We're taught from a very early age these concepts and constructs of good, bad, right, wrong. And then we somehow believe and attach our well-being to those things, which kind of makes sense as a child because, yeah, if I don't do what these people say, I'm without food, I'm without shelter, I'm without love. So I'm going to keep doing that stuff because that seems to be what has me kept safe. And all that happens is we then keep attaching to these things outside of us. Like Gary said, you know, we attach our well-being to cars and jobs and salaries and think, oh, I'll be okay when. And that chase is endless because literally there is no end to the needs of that identity that imagines it's not okay. Behind all that busyness, behind all that noise is the okayness that never went anywhere. And it's just got hidden. It's just been disguised. And so, yeah, my work is very much about unlearning, not actively. So we don't have to go through each individual belief trying to unlearn it or reframe it or re-believe it. We're dissolving them. We're naturally washing them downstream because they just start to look unnecessary. We start to see the futility of them and the endless chase of them.
this is like getting really deep, to the point where I'm kind of like swimming out of my depth a little bit. But let me just like reframe for the fellow idiots who listen to my show. Actually, you're not idiots. You're all very smart people. but basically what you're saying is that this is from childhood, where basically we might be, we eventually go towards praise because our parents or our environment will reward and penalize us based on a set of rules. And we end up sort of learning those rules. But over time, we end up having too many of those rules, and we're unable to listen to, you know, our innate soul, so to speak. You know, the things that we would naturally do have been blocked because we've kind of got a thicket of these rules and processes that are in the way.
Yeah, and which is why it's often middle age where we get to this point of realization, like I was mad, like I've had, because the realization is our innate ability to change. We all have that. We all have the capacity for realization, and that's where real change happens from. And it's often when we get to this stage of around 30 to 50 years old, where, yeah, the rules have got too much. Like, there's so many conflicting ones, and there's now different experiences where none of my existing rules work. Like, how do I live in this experience now? And so we get to this point where we need a new paradigm. We need a new level of consciousness to operate from, because this isn't working for us anymore. And so actually I see experiences like Gary's as brilliant. They're like gifts from God, because it's like, that's what was needed in his system to create a breakthrough. And you've used that term, haven't you, Gary, of breakthrough rather than breakdown.
Absolutely.
A complete shift in level of awareness and level of consciousness. And from that, life gets easier.
You know what?
Yeah, may I?
Just one thing, Susanna, this is actually just an observation, so not even a point. But it's almost like a microcosm of the macrocosm that we see, right? Where we have a global system that may have just accrued all of this bureaucratic load and systemic issues and all the rest of it, and it just needed a shock, like a very small virus, you know, that actually has been floating around. Loads of different viruses have been around all this time, and it's completely causes a huge shock.
Yeah.
You know, again, sorry to use you as an example again, Gary, but perhaps this is a system-wide example of what you experience at a personal level. So go ahead, Susanna.
No, I just want to follow what you just said. I had a few ideas, but I'm still following on yours. You said that we are kind of shuttered out of the ordinary. We are kind of experiencing something which is really not normal life, as we know. And I think that sometimes, as a Heideggerian idea about kind of, we only actually paying attention to things when they are broken. Suddenly, when something is functional, we are not paying attention. It's not relevant because we are using it every day, and we do not put much thought about it. Suddenly, everything is crumbling down, and we're paying attention. And I think that's very relevant that we're paying attention, because most of the time we do not pay attention. We just go through our lives without kind of thinking about maybe big philosophical questions. And I think I am. It's probably very, very complex and very hard to express how this is influencing my thought. But in a sense, when we do see things are not working, we are kind of in heightened alert. And in this allow us to be engaged, to go and maybe try new things. And following on Helen, I would just say that it's something about reconstructing and deconstructing ourselves. And this is my belief as an existential therapist, that we are not the person who will be stuck in their childhood forever. We are having ability to find the different ways. And I think the narrative and story of our lives is changing, and it's changing in a way that we can be writers to our story. So we can do things. So I think that I do believe that there is a lot of resilience in a human being, and lots of individual strength, which can be kind of overcome exactly in this very moment. And following on Soren Kierkegaard, probably, I'm dropping a little bit of name dropping, but I think it's relevant what he was actually searching in his whole life work. His pertinent question was, how I become the human? Who am I as a human? What kind of a human I am at the moment? So I think, and this is a very relevant philosophical question. And I'm not talking about making great, moves in your life, but really small little changes which actually will reflect upon you, and you can then ask yourself, am I the human at the moment, at this very historical moment, I would say, which I want to be or who I want to be. So there are questions which we can always ask ourselves on a daily basis. So we should all say, actually,
and again, we don't want to sort of, we recognize that this pandemic is a catastrophe and tragic for so many people. But at the same time, it's caused us all to stop, hasn't it? It's caused us all to kind of, the wheels have stopped turning economically, maybe even in our own mind, psychologically a little bit. Is this, do you see this as an opportunity for us to have some of these conversations with ourselves, to maybe rewrite some of these stories?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's probably even maybe learning how to stay with the negative emotions, like anxiety or so-called negative emotions, because my point of view that anxiety is very relevant and important. It's not the negative feeling. It's something which prompts us to maybe act in a different way. It shows us our responsibilities, maybe push us towards the different decisions in our life. So I think it's about time when we can really face ourselves, which for many people, it can be a difficult feat at the moment, because we like to escape, as you mentioned previously, Hung, that you're kind of busying yourself with lots of things, and when there is a lockdown, so to speak, we don't know what to do.
Yeah, you know what, you made a really interesting point, Susanna, about the sort of, we have sort of categorized emotional states in this positive and negative way, but I've actually never thought about actually why have we applied like a plus minus understanding on some of these feelings, when in fact they are very natural, right, Helen? I mean, everyone feels anger, everyone feels anxiety, but we've kind of considered them in one bucket, that's bad, and then we've considered sort of other examples to say they're good, but they're kind of just things that will always happen. You would imagine, let's say, a less conscious being, you know, like a dog, for instance, you know, they would have some emotions, but they're not walking around feeling bad about having them. You know, I mean, the dog might be frightened. That's good. Something maybe worth being scared of. So it's really interesting to have a think about, you know, the framework of understanding emotion. Is it the right thing to put them into these binary opposites, which, you know, is obviously... one of the tools we use to simplify the complexity, right? We want to put things into a plus minus because that's easier for us to grok, so to speak.
Yeah, well, it goes back to that thing of actually I'm okay when I'm happy, because, and I've done it with my kids. I caught myself when my daughter was upset or in a bad mood, and I caught myself saying to her, "What's wrong?" And I'm, oh my God, I'm literally doing it now. I'm programming her to find a thing outside of her to blame for this emotional experience she's having, and then stopped and realized, oh my goodness, there doesn't need to be anything. Emotions are natural. They come and go. We have experiences of all sorts of anger and happiness and joy and sadness, and they just come and go naturally. And then all we've done is we've learned to attribute and correlate the outside world to this inner experience, when the outside world was never anything to do with it. It was just this appearance of anger. And I've been taught to look outside and go, right, what can I blame for anger? Or what can I blame for this anxiety? How can I control that out there to make me feel better? But it was never about out there. We've innocently misunderstood and correlated the outside world to this inner experience. And that's where the suffering all comes from.
The emotion's not optional, because you're going to feel it. But the suffering that we have on these emotions is something we can control. And it's what you've just said there, Helen. I just want to, again, learn it for myself by repeating it if I can. You're essentially saying that once we look for external drivers of that emotion, we will then sort of inevitably pursue an external solution to that scenario, trying to, let's say, or do something else about it. But it doesn't resolve our ability to deal with that emotion when it is going to come again, because it's going to come again. Very interesting.
And the more we're just curious about it, the more we recognize all the thoughts that we are believing incorrectly, innocently incorrectly. And then we go, oh, why am I believing that? That makes no sense. It doesn't need judgment. It doesn't need to be got rid of. It just needs to be seen for what it is.
And then let me, I don't want to dominate the conversation here. So Gary, feel free to step in and ask a few questions to these great minds on our show here. Because the reason why I want to just go on this a little bit more, because I actually asked this question not an hour ago to a friend of mine who I perceive to have, you know, potentially a tricky situation. And I did say, hey, what's up? What's the matter? Now that for me was like, okay, a showing of care, if you like, but I'd probably try and, you know, resolve that problem if I could, or offer suggestions and so forth. But you're saying, are you saying that that is not an optimal way of dealing with that situation, Helen? And if it isn't, then what is the right way to approach that?
There is no right way. So that's where we get lost. So that's the conceptual mind saying there's a right way to deal with it and a wrong way to deal with it. There's a box for right and there's a box for wrong. And by pulling it right back upstream, looking to what's really going on, whatever happens downstream doesn't matter. Whatever happens at the level of content of experience and behavior does not matter. There will be things that Gary might look back on, or you could look back on and go, at the time might have seemed like a terrible thing for somebody to say to you or for you to say to somebody else. But that could have been a pivotal moment. It could have been a breakthrough moment. We can never know what the right thing is, ever. And the less we try and mess around at the level of content and behavior, the easier it gets, and the more actually we find that the words come naturally. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with saying, what's wrong, are you okay? So for sure, because my understanding has changed, I don't ask my kids to find a reason for why there's a problem. Or if they think there's a reason, I just listen. I don't try and solve for them. I don't try and fix the outside world to make their experience okay. I'm just there. And actually, yeah, just listening is incredibly powerful, but it's not that listening is right. It's just sometimes listening is the thing that happens. And sometimes asking questions happens. And sometimes advice happens. And we don't need to worry about right, wrong.
And I think good enough is good enough sometimes. Mm-hmm. We sometimes we error and we do mistakes. Even us, and even me, I do make mistakes. But I think that there is a chance for repair. And I think we're talking about emotional exchange between two people. So that intersubjectivity is very relevant, because you're sitting in the ground of two people having a dialogue, having a conversation and showing empathy. So whatever you do, you are being present in that relationship. And I think this matters most. And I think the dance with emotion is very important, to kind of be reflective, to stay with it. And I think by receiving emotion in your mind or in your cognition, or even bodily, receiving it bodily in your body is very relevant, because then there are kind of information is delivered to you. So if we will be saying that emotion should be parked somewhere and I'm not going to pay attention, let's be it. Sometimes that might be the solution for it for the time being. But usually it's the best thing to approach it, to investigate. So be curious, why am I feeling shame here? Why am I guilty? What's going on for me? So then you know yourself better. And then kind of from that point, you can kind of act in a different way.
You know what? That's really interesting. Something that backed up Gary's comment earlier at the very beginning, that you got to sit in your emotions a little bit and not try to rush through, even if they are not, let's say, enjoyable. Some emotions might be described as uncomfortable, but let's investigate why that is the case. Yeah. It reminds me very much of a friend of mine who I think she's watching this show. Fanny, if you're there, say hello. She takes cold showers, right? And she's trying to persuade me to do the same, and I'm thinking, yeah, right, that's not happening. But basically she's saying, you know what, one of the ways in which you deal with this is actually to relax into it. Like, you don't try and resist the idea that this is going to be cold. You simply have to breathe into it and understand that this is a sensation that you're going to feel, and actually it's not going to kill you. And when it might actually feel even more unpleasant is when you tense up and you try to resist it. So I think one thing that's coming clear from conversation I'm having with all three of you is that there's a sense that we need to understand the emotion, not understand it, but let's say feel it and be with it, and not try to terminate it too early. Just understand that this is something that's going on, and fit and ask questions, be curious about it. And maybe that in itself is the best way for it to be non-damaging so to speak. It's almost like, again, I can't help but think of military metaphors here, but it's almost like someone shot an arrow at you. By the way, if it's a terrible metaphor, correct me if I'm wrong. Someone shot an arrow at you. Maybe the worst thing you can do is try and just pull it out, right?
or not.
Yeah, that's possibly the worst thing. You've got to understand it a little bit more before you figure out what to do. So that's really interesting. Okay, so we've talked about these big topics. I want to try and pull it back down a little bit to some practical things. In fact, let's deal with a question that Sabrina asked, actually. So Sabrina, I'm going to try and deal with answering your question here. By the way, if anybody has any questions, please do ask them in the tab. I think there's a question, ask a question tab. Ask them there. We'll be able to spot them. So this is one for you, Helen. So Sabrina's asking, is there a special framework that you use when you're doing your work? I mean, you're coaching somebody, they've got these issues. How do you unpack that? What's the framework that you use?
Yeah, so the concept which points to the truth behind it all is called the three principles. So it's an understanding of our psychological system. So it describes the system, it describes the process that's happening. And it's through understanding that we then realize what's been always happening and how we work at our best. But yeah, the three principles founded by a guy called Sid Banks back in the 70s.
And what are those principles again, Helen? Just remind me again.
Yeah, I didn't share them before, actually. So mind, consciousness, and thought.
Okay, can you just explain that to me, please?
A little bit. So so mind is the brilliance. Mind is what I equate to being the brilliance behind everything. Thought is the thinking that we have, which is multi-layered. So we obviously hear the very noisy stuff that's up here, but there's layers and layers of thought that enable us to experience life. And it's consciousness which brings it all into reality. It's consciousness that turns the energy of mind via the film of thought into a full 4D movie experience.
Right. So this is almost, even though it's not a precise sequence, but if we can kind of imagine a model, we might be able to say it starts off with this innate mind. Mm-hmm. Use the thoughts as a rationalizer, a filter of all mm-hmm. of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the consciousness is when we all kind of reassemble it. So it's almost like the rational thought might disaggregate, if I can use that term. It kind of dissembles it, unpacks it, reduces it. And maybe the consciousness is the attempt to repackage it and explain it to ourselves. Is that right? Or
consciousness is probably more about it's the projection of the movie. So if we use a movie projector as the metaphor, mind is like the power source. Thought is, right. is the movie in the real, and consciousness is the light bulb enabling the movie to be projected onto the screen.
Right. Someone should be a sketch artist and draw this out and share it with everyone. That would be really good to know. Anyway, who's this guy again? Sid somebody?
Gary shared Michael Neal's website. Michael's one of the leading coaches in this field.
Right. So that's something.
Really short Monday morning podcast, which is really awesome to listen to.
Amazing. That's excellent. Okay, we've got some more questions actually. So I'm going to try and sort of give it to the crowd here to see to the panelists to see whether we can get through these answers. This is from Daniel, and again, I think he's locating it to a sort of a very practical circumstance that many people might be feeling right now. How can we as recruiters avoid burning out in the coming months? So I think this is all about, you know what, we've got this new circumstance. Oh, we were told it was 2 weeks, but now people are talking months. There's 12 months being cited and all this type of stuff. It looks like such a long journey. What's your advice to people? I mean, if you can, with recruiters, you know, recruiters typically have emerged from an intensive, high sort of an in-person environment where they typically be out with a lot of people. Now they're not, and they've got this long path ahead of them. Any thoughts on that? Gary, you haven't said anything recently. I wonder whether you can volunteer something.
I'll give you just a quick bit from my side. I think it links back to your earlier question around actually finance. You know, for those that are facing the very real threat of job loss or anything else that's very real for them at the moment is connection. Back to, I think, the great comment that Susanna mentioned earlier. Communities like yours, Brain Food, there's other communities like Humans First. There are a lot of people right now that are open. The aperture is open to connect without an ulterior motive. So I'd really invite people listening to us now, this is a great opportunity with the downtime to really expand your network, not because you're looking for something, but just because you're open-hearted and just really want to build out, because that might bring that next job or that next opportunity. So I think it's a great chance to really build your community right now.
All right, that's brilliant, because it's action point number one. You're basically saying, you know what, all of the, because recruiters are relentless optimizers, aren't we? Like, we're not going to talk to anybody unless it's going to help us make a placement. You know, that's the kernel of bad candidate. However, now, you know, we have the time. For the first time in your career, you now have excess time. So why don't you just make some random connections? You know, go and speak to somebody that you would just never think that this is a person you could convert into a candidate or a client. Just pick someone and talk to them and see whether you can get something out of it. And I bet you would. Let me tell you a very quick story, actually. There was a long time ago, there was this dude who created an app in Old Street. And he tried to basically reinvent networking, because he realized networking was like a real, like a high anxiety situation. You know, have you ever been on one of these networking events? Oh, go ahead and network. And everyone's like, you know, feeling like a complete fraud, horrible experience. But anyway, this guy understood that the key to good networking is actually the serendipity of meeting someone who you might not have qualified. He was like, oh, that's a really cool conversation. I would never have picked her or him out if I saw a profile. So anyway, he created a thing which is like a random coffee thing. You simply put your time and a date and a location, and you just turn up, and this person would match you to somebody random. And it would be a complete random thing. You would have, there was some security criteria. So you might be able to say, look, I don't want to meet, you know, a woman who's this type of person or whatever it is. I totally get it. You know, you've got reasons not to meet certain types of people. I get it. But for me, I was like ticking every box. Forget about it. Whoever it is, I want to talk to. And you know what? I was to this app. Because I was going every week to this coffee shop, meeting some amazing people that I would never have had even the motivation to think about. There was one guy who's a taxi driver. Another girl was a ballerina. There was all kinds of characters that were living lives that I had no knowledge of. But it was such an enriching hour of conversation to get a bit of insight about what they were all about. I realized at that point, man, I'm only ever talking to technology founders, VCs, and recruiters. That's all I'm talking about. That's a microcosm of the planet in terms of how the people on this world. So I realized that actually over-optimized for the people I wanted to speak to. And I really, to use your term, Gary, open the aperture. Right now, Daniel, we've got the opportunity to open the aperture. So, okay. Do you two, go to you, Susanna, do you have a quick answer for the question Daniel answered? Like, what's the technique that you would say for a recruiter who might be going stir crazy? How would you advise them to approach this period?
I think expand your boundaries, and I'm following on you, Hank, to be really experimental. And maybe you do something which you never done it before. And I think it's also about expanding your limits. And limitations might be imposed on us in a sense of staying inside. But as you said, internet and other forms of communication can be available to us. So be a little bit that guy or girl who will be experimenting and pushing boundaries. And I think this is tied up with the courage, I guess. So if we can find some kind of or source of our courage is approaching that strange guy, as you said, and we're touching upon intersubjectivity. So being with the people who might be even totally different to us, because this can be enriching and can be actually very, very helpful to us. We reconstruct our view of the world in a different way when we meet people who are quite different. So
yeah, I think essential, because in fact this goes back to even the period before COVID. I do think it's going to be like an BC AD type scenario. Is it before COVID, after COVID? There was an issue about being in social media bubbles and, you know, only interacting with people that of like mind, and, you know, if someone had a point of view that didn't sit well with you, boom, blocked. Yeah. You know, that was the feeling. But now maybe this is the time. Let's go talk to some people that previously you'd keep at a distance. Helen, let me come to you with that same question. You've got a lot of people who are listening to this show that are looking down a barrel. Again, bad metaphor. Why am I using these violent things? guns and arrows, man. But they're looking at what might be a challenging period. How do they, how would your advice for them to cope with this?
Yeah, so this might sound a bit random, but what just came to mind was an experiment that one of my coaches offered once in a program I was doing, and it was really quite powerful. So given if you're at home and perhaps feeling like things are a bit mundane and a bit boring, a way to really bring yourself into the present moment and realize the richness of life is to write on your hand last day. So write in the back of your hand last day and live that day as if it's your last. And just notice what that's like. Notice what your experiences are like. And it's really useful having it on the back of your hand because you do forget. But then every now and then you'll look at it and you'll remember. And even if it's just for a few minutes, you live as if it's your last day. You go, oh my God, yeah, last day. And just notice the richness of the experience you get, because that's all about really bringing ourselves into the moment and recognizing that even ironing, even doing the cleaning, even washing the dishes can be fascinating when we really stop and just be with what we're doing.
That's really great. And I think you are right. It's that it focuses, we're basically, again, I talk about optimization. You know, we're in a world, or perhaps we're in a world, where we really prioritize efficiencies. You know, every minute had to be accounted for. You know, productivity is a qualifier as to whether you had a good day or not. Whereas actually, you know, sometimes you can have a very rich experience in the mundane. Like, can you find the magic in the mundane? And if you can do that, wow, you're never going to have a boring minute in your life again, right? Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're nearly coming to the end of the show, but Fanny's asked a really interesting question, and I just want to deal with that real quick. She said, look, you've been discussing great concepts, but let's go back to the practical, down-to-earth advice. What would be the top three tips for all of us to go through during this challenging time mentally? Okay, we were talking practicality, similar to you, the example, Helen, of writing the last day in the back of your hand. Like, give us a technique that that people could use. So anyone want to go first on that? Practical down-to-earth tips you could advise people who are currently, you know, under a little bit of mental strain here. They're looking for a tool or a framework or something to help them.
I'll go quickly, Hung. And it does take courage, back to Susanna's point, but find yourself an accountability partner, someone you don't know or someone you do know that you can actually sense check what's going on with your thinking. Almost like a peer-to-peer support. Doesn't have to cost a penny. Reach out to someone, be vulnerable, tell them what you want to engage around, and just have that conversation. You can do that with me. You can do that, I'm sure, with any of these people here. But just be courageous and reach out. There'll be plenty of people willing to support you.
Right, accountability partner. That's actually something, and would that be reciprocal, or is it a case where it needs to be reciprocal, or can it be one way?
It could be one way. That depends on the two people. It's totally up to those two people. But the point is, there's a lot of humans out there right now that are ready to offer that space, which is often, as Helen said, it's a listening space, not a speaking space, because people need to hear themselves thinking. That's the key part.
Yeah, cool. Very good. Okay, Susanna, let's go to you. One practical thing.
Yeah, I very much agree what you just said, Gary, but I will say, maybe I will add to everything the embodied experience. Feel your body. Feel it in a different way, maybe. Dance or really be present. And I think we're already seeing people jogging and going out and being in an environment. And I think I have to reach for one really good book, which I was reading. So something like this. I don't know if you can hear or see it.
What is this? The Philosophy of Walking. I actually came across this. I haven't read it, but I came across the title a little while ago, actually.
So maybe get in touch with your embodied experience, I would say. I agree with what was said before. And it's really difficult to give only a couple of examples to people, because everybody is different and everybody might benefit from a different advice. But I think be in your body, not only in mind.
I do like that. And again, this may be the cold shower thing that Fanny was on about. You know, it's like, here's an opportunity for you to really feel your body, because you might have just got used to a certain kind of way of being and you've misunderstood how your body operates. Okay, cool. Helen, final word to you. If you could give that one last tip to people who are kind of in this strange situation for them, and they you need to give them, you know, a technique or a tool or a tip, what would that be?
Yes, it's not my normal place to hang out, but I'm noticing that Gary's was more psychological and Susanna's was more physical. So I'm going to go different, go creative. And really borrowing from my experience with my kids, there's a daily art challenge on Instagram. Carson Ellis, at Carson Ellis. They're sharing a daily challenge and it's just great fun. They're different every day and it's just a completely different way of a different experience. Like most of us don't spend our time drawing or colouring in. And
how does this work? Is everyone drawing the same thing? Is that the idea?
So we, every day they post like three little, what's the word, instruction cards. So like person, invisible legs, big nose or whatever. And then you have to do your own creation with the prompts that they post. So yeah, it's just good fun. It's completely different kind of space to be hanging out in than we normally do.
Can you remind us all again what that Instagram, if you share the link somewhere, that'd be amazing.
I think it's at Carson Ellis. Let me just double check.
Yeah, fantastic idea. I love stuff like this because it gives people sort of a technique that really is practical. You can go ahead and do it and try it. And I think experiential learning is quite important as well. One thing I think is true from my view, just observing how people behave, is that it seems that, you know, we struggle at a conceptual level, even though we might intellectually get it. It doesn't seep down to how we change our behavior. But maybe we need to have some of this this direct experience, really. Okay, you know what? Rich Cooper's asked the final interesting question, and I want to just extend the show just a little bit more just to try and answer this because I think it's really interesting. Again, it's going to be around Robin, okay? So it is. What is the one thing you learned about yourself over the last couple of weeks that's really surprised you? So Gary, I'm gonna ask you this question. What is the one thing you learned about yourself over the last couple of weeks that really surprised you?
Do you want the bold one? Do you want the vulnerable one?
I want the truth, man.
The truth? So I was diagnosed with potential testicular cancer a few weeks
ago. Oh, I know this one, yes.
You're fine, man. It's cool. Had my right testicle removed. I'm telling the world that right now. And my mind, the work I've done the last few years, it surprised me how I've dealt with that situation. So I've had a little bit of the Kubler-Ross sort of emotions, but on balance, it's been actually quite a weird, enjoyable experience because the cancer's cancer. It's not me. Like, so yeah, that's been my real big learning the last couple of weeks.
That's good. That's a great story, Gary. Thanks for sharing it. Particularly, it must have given you sense of confidence, actually, that you've handled what is potentially a traumatic bit of news, traumatic episode, it's not affected you it's not sent you off in the wrong direction. And again, this is some of the stuff that you've learned over the last several years, thinking and doing this type of stuff. So amazing. Let's go with you again, Susanna. What would you say is the one thing you learned about yourself over the last couple of weeks? Surprising. So this is a revelation for you.
That's kind of maybe a simple thing, but I just realized that as a psychotherapist, we are quite adverse to technologies. And I would say the face-to-face contact is our prevalent tool to be with others. But I think I kind of swiftly accommodated to a situation and I was able to move all my business online. I was able to communicate it well with my clients through emails, through WhatsApp groups. So it was really great. And also I set up the platform quite to help those in a need for free. So it kind of, I can expand my horizon beyond my expectations. So I think, yeah, I'm kind of becoming more savvy and I am here today. So it's a courageous act on my side, I would say.
Indeed. Yeah. That's great to hear. So you found basically a technical aptitude that perhaps you never thought you had, which is fantastic.
And being cool on your show as well, it's a part of the courageous bit because that's live and it's kind of not prepared.
Also, the peak of many people's careers as well. So, it's, I can understand it's like quite difficult and anxious for people to come on. So, thank you for that. So, Helen, I finished with you. What's the one thing that surprised you the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so one of my biggest beliefs that I was still clinging on to was that I can't homeschool my kids. The number of times they've said to me, Mummy, why can't you just homeschool us? I've always been like, no, oh my God, no, not ever happening. And then guess what? The virus throws that right in my face and says, yes, you are homeschooling your kids. So yeah, I've learned that turns out I can, and not necessarily gracefully. So I can share the post that I wrote from a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't a graceful first week, but I'm hoping that by the time they go back to school after Easter, it's going to be a whole different game.
That's amazing. Thank you very much for that, Helen. And what's interesting from all of us here is that we have actually these are real examples of something that we have got from this enforced scenario that we didn't choose. But it's an example going right back to what we're talking about, the difference between an externality and an internality. Basically, the external environment we can't do too much about, but we can have choices about how we deal with the reality that we've got. We've discovered things about ourselves as a result of it. So,
May I ask one quick question?
Of course, yeah, go ahead.
What have you learned about yourself the last 2 years?
It's very simple. I'm not as good at press ups as I thought I was. Because I was really good at this. One of the very few things I was extraordinarily good at was press ups. I would say I could beat almost anyone I meet in the number of press ups I can knock out. But I'm struggling to do 40 now. And I'm thinking, what the hell's happening here? So I need to revisit that. I need to understand, because technically I can do it and it's actually not that difficult physically. So there's something psychologically stopping me from doing that. So I've got to get back on that horse and start pounding these things out. So anyway, that's what I've discovered. Listen, thanks everyone for watching. Thanks Helen, Susanna and Gary for joining the show. We are slightly over time. Thank you everyone for being here. I'm going to try and write this up. So if you are interested in the blog post on this, just comment again on whatever channel you're at and say, yes, you want the tips from Hung Lee that's collected from the brains on the show. And I'll get the PDF out to you so you can get a digest on all of that. But thank you, everyone, for watching. Thanks again to our sponsors, Applied. They are a diversity assessment product, I think game-based assessment. If you want to diversify your talent pool, definitely check them out. We're back next week, of course. We're talking hiring hackathons. How do you do this online? So make sure you tune in for that. Okay, that's about it. Have a good afternoon and a good evening and a good weekend, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers,
Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.